All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Coming up on episode 390 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Genesis GV80 Coupe, the 2025 Chevrolet Traverse. We all drive the new 2025 Hyundai Ioniq 5. Chevy's got a new Spark EV that's not coming to America. Kia's got the EV4 and PV5. BMW's Heart of Joy prototype. Stella's Auto Drive. Polestar's getting an electronic upgrade. Volvo's teases the new ES90 sedan. And the GSA is going to shut down 8,000 EV chargers. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 390 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual Samet from Telemetry Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from CarBuzz.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
And Nicole, what have you been driving?
I am driving. My computer just locked. Dang it. I'm leaving it on for 30 seconds.
We're going to send you a computer from this century, Nicole. I don't know what's going on.
I don't understand. And it's,
your My Amiga is not working.
Are you still using that Surface?
I am. I got it. I'm good now.
Maybe I'll send you one of those MacBook Airs, the M1 MacBook Airs that Walmart has for like $600.
I understand. Yeah. I'm back. Okay. So I had the 2025 Chevrolet Traverse. And I like the Chevy Traverse. It was actually, I got the chance to take it out in snow. It's always great to take out these big SUVs in crummy weather because you see whether or not they actually can handle the day-to-day. And it did great. I have the Z71, which is the off-road version of this. It has bright red tow hooks because you only mean business if you have bright red tow hooks. If they're black, meh, they're red. You're like, yeah, I'm really mean business. I like this. It's a nice roomy SUV. I mean, it's tons of space. It's very comfortable. It rides pretty quiet considering how big it is. And it's huge. That's the only thing. It is 204.5 inches long. It's big.
It has more room inside than a Tahoe.
Yeah, it is a huge vehicle. It doesn't look quite as big on the outside as it does once you're behind the wheel, because when you're behind the wheel, it's great. It's easy to drive. But as soon as you go to park it, oy. And the thing that's happening right now is we've had so much snow, and the way it came in, it was very frozen right afterwards. So the plows didn't do a great job. So like if you're on a road, your two lanes is more like 1 2/3. So you're missing. So if you're in that right-hand lane and there's someone next to you, there's now snowbank and it feels very, very narrow. Like, oh gosh, this is my SUV. And parking is just, if you're in narrow spots, it's a bit of a challenge because it's so big. It has a good amount of power. It's got a 2.5 liter turbocharged four cylinder, 328 horsepower, 326 pound feet of torque. It's got an 8-speed automatic. This isn't a sports car, but it is surprisingly responsive for how large it is. If you mash on the gas, the thing moves. It easily gets out of its own way. And it does so with a pretty decent amount of manners. It's not overly aggressive. It's not, because again, this is like sporty, but not a sports car. It is still a three-row SUV, so it's big. It's not going to move like a sports car. But I enjoyed driving this. I surprisingly enjoyed driving this. I thought it was just going to feel like this sort of large, cumbersome thing.
Lumbering
oaf of a vehicle down the highway. No, it was actually really nice. And I love the interior. So on this one, on the Z71, it gets these red accents all through the interior, and it's sort of like it's plastic basically, but it makes you think of like red carbon fiber. It is not, but it has that look to the pattern. It is truly just plastic, and it goes around the handles on the front doors, and it goes along all the trim on the edge of the dashboard. It looks really cool, actually. It kind of makes it look kind of fun inside. I really enjoyed this, and I think my brother-in-law and his wife were in the car the other day too. We went out to dinner last night. They thought it was lovely. They were very sad that the red did not translate all the way through the back. They wanted the fancy red on the front to be in the second row. They felt a little cheated. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'll
Well, they do have some red on the
seats. Yes, they do have some red on the seats, but it was the fancy red trim on the door panels that John and Susan were disappointed that they did not have. Yeah. So I did like it. And I like the way that you know, it has a nice, the way the screens are set up with the infotainment screen, that's that one now display. So you, like when you look at it, it looks like one giant screen all the way across to the instrument cluster, even though it's not. I did discover, so if you look at a picture, so there's a very large volume knob, one of those that looks like it's sort of like stuck right to the top of the infotainment portion of the screen, sort of on the left, which is fine. But I have a habit of when I grab the volume, you kind of want to rest your fingers above it, you know, like if you're adjusting the volume. The power button for this whole system is on that top thing. So I go volume, and I know I can do it other ways, but I'm like, why do I keep turning this off? And it's so, I like had to sort of sit up. I'm like, oh, because there's a power button right there. And
yeah, there's just like a little indent. It's silk screened with the little power logo icon.
Yeah,
there.
And so you can't, if you don't look down on it, you don't even know it's there. And I sort of was looking at it, and I'm like, wait. There's kind of a little divot in there. Wait a minute. Is there a power button? Sure enough. So I must turn the infotainment screen off probably 4 or 5 times before I was like, what am I doing wrong here? I'm just touching the volume. And it is a 17.7 inch screen. So it's big. You have wireless, you know, connectivity for your smartphone. I felt like it's just a very well-rounded vehicle. It kind of does everything you want. It's roomy for your family. It has a good amount of cargo room. It has a good amount of towing. It's nice to drive. It looks nice inside without being overly fancy. Again, it's a family vehicle. And the thing when you get too fancy in a family car is family means kids and kids mean mess. And if things get too fancy, too refined, too overdone, it's great if you just have a bunch of adults in the car. Not so great when you have kids with muddy boots. And like, I think about how much salt is on the road in New Hampshire right now. The pictures I had to take of this car, they're like, we should take pictures anyway. I'm like, you realize that as I roll out of the car wash, it's going to look salty immediately. Like I won't actually make it to the road. So yeah, so I just remember what that would do to the inside of the car, like your floor mats. And I think about some of these really sort of, I don't know, overly fancy 3 rows. They're like, your kids are going to trash this car. It's beautiful right now. If you live where it snows, your kids are going to trash it. Doesn't feel that way in this. Pricing wise, so this comes with front wheel and all wheel drive, except for the Z71, which is all wheel drive only. So this, the base price is $47,000. I have two discrepancies. My Monroney says $47,600. Online, it said $47,800. So 47-ish. Let's go with that. What do you guys think of?
More like 48-ish.
Yeah. The mid to high 47s.
Let's go 48-ish. So what do you guys want to take a guess at destination?
Oh, I'm going to say
$1,795.
Oh, I'm $1,495.
You're way closer, Robbie. It's $1,395. Sam, you went way high. Way high. So
it's a big car.
I thought for a big vehicle like this that they would jack
up. $1,395.
It's a big American car.
Yeah. So that's with standard all-wheel drive, the 3 rows of seating. This one has captain's chairs. It look, you know, so that's, it's not an inexpensive car, but that's a good price for what you're getting with this. If you go with the cheapest version of the Traverse that you can get, front-wheel drive LT, it's $40,700. If you go with the most expensive version of this vehicle that you can get, it's the RS with all-wheel drive, and it's $56,100. That is a huge price spread. From 40 to 56. So there's something in there for every budget, but here's the thing. Like it jumps, like the LT is really inexpensive. Even with all wheel drive, it only goes up by $2,000. Then you go up, you know, like five to get to the Z71. From that 47.8 from the Z71, it jumps to 53,000 for the high country. So if you're going for the fancier trims, so to speak, you're going to pay a premium for this. So you have to really want that fancy, I guess. I don't know if I would do that. I don't know if I would, I guess, for the right person. But I don't know that I could pay $56,100 for the RS with all-wheel drive. But overall, I like this. I like the engine. I like the interior. I think this is a solid vehicle. It's as ye olde Chevys go, I like this one.
Ye olde Chevys.
Ye olde Chevys.
So. Question for you. Sure. Your Wrangler is a Rubicon, right?
Yes, indeed.
So did you and Russ get a toe strap and play tug of war with the hooking up to the toe
we
hooks?
Did not. We did not. I think Russ would probably say, well, it's because I would have won because I'm in a Jeep. But no, we did not.
And then, you know, the four-cylinder, I think last week we were talking, about the sound of Toyota four-cylinder engines. And that conversation has continued on in the Discord this week. People all agreeing that Toyota four-cylinders are not the most pleasant sounding engines. You know, this year for the new Traverse, they've ditched the V6 that they had, the 3.6 liter V6. They've got a, you know, 2.7 liter turbo four or 2.5 liter turbo four across the board. How did you feel about like the sound and nature of that engine?
Was it engine? No, actually, I like this engine. I thought I didn't. So in every calm average driving, just cruising along, it's not an intrusive engine noise at all. It's not droning. It's not loud. The transmission is nice. It's a nice pairing between the two. And if you're really heavy on that gas, if you really want to mash it because you're getting onto the highway to get up to speed and traffic's heavy, you hear it, but you don't hear it in this annoying, it's not annoying. It's just like engine doing work kind of sound that as soon as you ease up, that eases up. I didn't find it intrusive. I thought it was nice. I was surprised. I don't know why I thought I was really not going to like this. I don't know what bias my brain had when I saw it in my driveway, but I enjoyed driving and I thought the engine was good. I thought it was nice and well-mannered and I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay. Did you use the Super Cruise?
I did play around with Super Cruise. Super Cruise had a lot of trouble though, because there's salt on everything. There's snow on everything. Our roads aren't roads. That was one of the things now that you bring that up. So I tried to use it just to sort of see how it would do when it's hard to see the lane markings for the road. It did pretty good, but you know where it got confused? So we had, and you kind of have to understand this kind of snow if you've been in some place where you've lived with it. When they haven't cleared the roads quite down to the pavement and you get chunks of like, it's like chunks of snow that become ice and sort of large little islands of this stuff. And they can be anywhere and you're like, you literally will bump go over them because they are like, you know, a couple of inches thick and they are now fused in one with the road. That snowbanks I was telling you that weren't really pushed quite enough far back has that sort of snow edging out into your lane. So sometimes you're driving over that. You are firmly in your lane, but that's what your right tire is on. It got confused by that. It somehow thought it was fine as long as it could see an edge to the road. But as soon as you got that weird snowy kind of berm thing, it thought I was driving off road and it was constantly like thinking it was wanting to move me to the left. Even when I didn't have Super Cruise on, it was like buzzing at me like you're drifting out.
Oh, so more the lane departure.
Yeah, so it was having having a hard time seeing where lanes were with the snow. Yeah. So that
which is fair. You
know, I mean, I don't want to seem like I'm knocking it. This is I mean, people are having a hard time seeing where the lanes are right now.
This is every system, to be honest.
Yeah.
Have the sort of, you have a human brain and you can like determine like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be driving, even though I can't.
Yeah. Cause even merging onto the highway by our house, the highway is it's two lanes that merge on. And then it's two lanes for a little while before it merges down a little bit as you get on the highway and there's snow in that right-hand lane. And I'm on the highway and I've driven this in Super Cruise before and it's getting confused. Like, it's like, oh, you should be further left. I'm like, no, now I'm in the middle of two lanes. Let's bump me a little bit to the right. So it couldn't read that. But I think this would happen with Blue Cruise. I think this would happen with any system. It totally is not a Super Cruise complaint. It's the limitations of driver assistance systems.
It's the limitation of a camera-based system that's, you know, it's relying on the cameras for localization. I think, you know, one company that, you know, has, you know, what might be a potential solution to that is Mobileye. You know, and to be fair, you know, at least in the past, I'm not sure if the current system still do. You know, GM did use some Mobileye stuff as part of Super Cruise for the vision perception. But, you know, what Mobileye has for their supervision system, which is their equivalent of Super Cruise, it's a hands-off level 2+ system, that they have their REM map system in there. And what they do is they build their own maps, their crowdsourced maps. So they collect data from millions of cars that are on the road with Mobileye systems on them that capture a lot of information, you know, not just about static features that are around the road that you can use to localize, but also data about where on the road drivers are actually driving. For example, at an intersection, where they stop or what trajectory they're taking when they make a left turn. So they've got all that kind of data in there that they use as part of their control strategy for figuring out, to try to make it more naturalistic driving. Mm-hmm. For example, in their map system, if you were to delve into their map system, you would see here's the path that human drivers are taking, like aggregating, from thousands of drivers that drive down this particular road. Here's where drivers are actually going. So even on a road that has no lane markings, like a rural right. road, it knows where you're supposed to drive based on where other drivers have gone. And so I'd be curious to try that system, on those same conditions. Yeah. To see if it can handle it any better.
Maybe. It might. That might be enough because everybody's going to be driving on what would look like the edge of the road or slightly to the right mm-hmm. of the edge of the road, depending on how bad the snowbanks are. It's an interesting challenge. It's one of those things that makes you look and say, our self-driving future, okay, but it's still a little ways off because this kind of stuff still requires a human to interpret what's happening in front of you because they're not well-defined situations,
Yeah, it's like I said, it's hard. It's hard for any system that is relying just on capture, vision in real time, without necessarily having that nuance of what you can or should actually be doing in that scenario. Mm-hmm. If you're just trying to capture, where's the edge of the road in real time without having that map data to back it up and not just the road level map, but also the driver behavior component of that, mm-hmm. then, that can help a lot in making those kinds of systems work.
Yeah.
Better.
Yep.
Cool. Robbie, did you have anything besides the Ioniq, which we'll get to in a minute?
Nope.
I
was going to get a car, but then turns out I already had the car. I was like, I was in the whole email. I'm like, hey, do you have these three cars? And then they were like, oh, we have one of them. I'm like, oh, great. And then they came back to me like a few hours later. They're like, yeah, you had that in November. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm sorry. I didn't check it off in my list of cars that I drive. I have a to-do list. Long story short, no, I didn't get nothing. I got to get some cars.
Smartphones have gotten way more expensive over the past decade, and all it takes is one impact on a hard floor to make you wish you had spent a few bucks to put a case on it. Going online without ExpressVPN is like not having a case for your phone, and it only costs a few dollars a month. Nicole, Robbie, and I travel a lot for our work, and we spend a lot of time in hotels, coffee shops, airplanes, and of course, the Delta Sky Club. Connecting to the Wi-Fi in any public places with shared Wi-Fi puts your data at risk because bad actors could be intercepting what you send and using it to steal from you. It only takes some cheap hardware to intercept Wi-Fi data, and even a smart preteen can do it. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per victim selling personal information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops the bad guys by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN uses state-of-the-art encryption that would take a supercomputer up to a billion years to crack. I have ExpressVPN on all my devices, including a MacBook Pro, Windows laptops and desktops, and Android and iOS phones and laptops or tablets. When I want to be secure, I just launch the app, click once to connect, and my data is secure. As I said, I travel a lot for my work, and I have to connect to countless public Wi-Fi networks in many countries. I have ExpressVPN on all my connected devices so that whoever else is on the same network can't see any of my data. That's important because I often have to check banks, credit card accounts, and transmit client data that might be sensitive, as well as filing articles on news that might be under embargo. ExpressVPN protects all of it, and I've been paying from my own account for years. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's expressvpn.com/wheelbearings, and you can get an extra 4 months for free. expressvpn.com/wheelbearings.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. Well, let me... just realized something I forgot to open up here. But let me talk about what I was driving, which was the 2025 Genesis GV80 Coupe 3.5T ESC all-wheel drive. So the GV80 Coupe, you know, is basically the GV80 with the back end of the roofline sliced off, you know, sort of BMW X6 style, and you know, like a lot of these other vehicles now, so it gives it a little bit sleeker look. You know, I mean, it's not obviously not really a coupe. You know, it's a fastback crossover, which is fine. You know, nothing wrong with that. So the one that I had was in what's the official color name here? Uni White. It's U-Y-U-N-I. I'm not sure how you would pronounce that. Uyuni White? Anyway, it was white.
Had a white car.
And they charged an extra $650 for that paint. And to be honest, I can't really tell. I mean, I'm not a fan of white cars in general, you know, but again, because of salt and, you know, other road grime. Couldn't really tell for the most part, you know, if it was a particular shade of white that was really worth paying extra for. I'm inclined to say no, you know, that it probably wasn't. You know, it is what it is. As part of launching the coupe this year, or last year, actually, Genesis also did a refresh, an overall interior refresh of the GV80. So the standard GV80 also has an updated interior. Let's see. And they've gone away, you know, on most of their models now from having, you know, a sort of the multiple screen setup where you have a traditional instrument cluster with a hood and everything, and then a separate center touchscreen, to going to the style of just having one large curved piece of glass that has a couple of displays embedded in there. So it looks like it's all one screen. It's actually two separate screens, similar to what you see on a lot of other stuff now, which, you know, it looks modern, but, you know, also kind of boring, to be honest.
They got a big, giant, you know, big white iPad. Good job, everybody.
Yeah. Big white curved iPad. As always, you know, very nice screens. I misspoke. It actually is all one big display. It's not two separate displays,
but the touchscreen's only on one side.
The I don't know. I didn't try touching the instrument cluster area. Yeah. So
I mean,
it may be
like
or may not be.
And
the thing is, you know, it also has a central control knob on the console, so you don't actually have to use the touch interface at all. You can just have it. Use the controller because it is where the screen is. It's actually quite a reach there to actually reach, and it's a little awkward to reach and touch it. So, you know, I know Nicole does not like central control knobs, but. Yeah, it is a bit of a reach to get to the one on the GV80. Mm-hmm. But you know, it looks modern. Around the center console area and across the top of the dash, it was finished in some kind of material. It looks like it's sort of a fabric weave, but with a coating of polyurethane or plastic on top of it. So it's smooth, but it looks like it has texture to it. It's an attractive look. It's not piano black, and it's, you know, multiple shades of gray and black. So it doesn't show up fingerprints the way just straight up piano black does, which is a benefit. There's a center control panel that's got some knobs for the temperature control, fan control, things like that, and then a bunch of touch interfaces in the middle of that to turn on heated seats and steering wheels and defoggers and all of that stuff. So it's a mix of physical and touch controls, but the most important stuff is physical controls for the volume tuner and the two temperature knobs. On the center console, you got that center controller I was talking about, and then a rotary controller also for the transmission. The interior of this one was, it was kind of an off-white, which I probably wouldn't buy for myself. It looks really nice, but probably going to get dirty real fast. So sort of a slight, light cream color, but it had pretty cool, red accent stitching on it, and a quilted pattern. And this particular one had magma orange seat belts.
Getting that Genesis signature
performance color in there.
I like
that. Yeah, and the 3.5T ESC, has both turbocharged and has an electronic supercharger, electrically driven supercharger. Or actually, no, sorry, it doesn't have standard turbocharger, just has the electrically driven supercharger. Trying to find the specs here. I cannot find the specs for this thing. Suffice to say, it's powerful. It's somewhere around 400 horsepower, roughly, and very responsive. Oh, 409 horsepower. There we go. Found it. 409 horsepower.
There you go.
With the electric supercharger, feels quick enough. It's got plenty of room. It's only a two row because it's a coupe, no headroom for a third row back there. The interior, as Genesis vehicles always do, feels very premium, feels very nice. One of the things with the switch away from the traditional style instrument cluster to this single broad display is the former 3D instrument cluster that they used to offer as an option is gone, which is fine because it was always kind of a gimmick anyway.
It was
turn it on and it was like, well, that was cool for about 30 seconds. Let me turn this off.
Yeah. And if you move your head around a little bit, you can kind of see, the 3D effect in there, but it was really kind of pointless. This approach is better. Yeah. It's cleaner. It's a nice clean design. generally really enjoyed driving this thing. It is, it's a good size, it's a kind of an upper mid size, crossover, 22 inch alloy wheels, driving in the snow. When I drove it in the snow and then left it parked for a day, because I didn't go anywhere because the weather was bad and it was snowing out. I had some snow and ice buildup in the wheels, on the interior of the wheel, of the wheel rim. And so the next time I went out to go for a drive, when I got up to highway speed, I could feel the vibration from the chunks of ice that were stuck to the inside of the wheel rim. It's always a good idea, if you live in winter conditions and you're going to, if you're washing your car, make sure that you hose out the wheel area as well. Just take the high pressure wash and make sure you get all the snow and ice that builds up in there, because otherwise you will get an imbalance on the wheel, and that doesn't feel good, and it's also not great for your suspension. Like I said, it's quick, not particularly fuel efficient. The label fuel efficiency value, 18 miles per gallon city, 22 highway, 20 combined. I went and did my 45 mile efficiency loop and actually hit right on 20 miles per gallon in mixed driving. So, it's not great, but for 400 horsepower, 409 horsepower, it's adequate. This one had all the stuff on there, so it had all the ADAS features. It's got a 10-year powertrain warranty, as all Hyundai Motor Group vehicles do. The display is a 27-inch OLED, looks really nice. It's got wireless CarPlay and Android Auto, Bang & Olufsen audio system. It's got Genesis digital key system, and it has a fingerprint sensor on the left end of the display area. But to program it, you have to have both key fobs, and they always leave when they deliver the car. So they always bring just one key fob. So I wasn't able to program that and try it. Although I've tried it in the past with a GV60, and it works fine. So you can actually use it without having the key fob on you, which, can be slightly handy. Let's see what else. Panoramic sunroof, like I said, the 22 inch wheels, all the stuff that you would expect on a premium SUV, including the price tag, $87,780. Guesses at the destination charge?
$1,495.
Nicole gets it. It was $1,350.
Okay.
Oh, good job, Nicole.
You're off by $55.
Go me.
Oh, and I found the interior color. It's vanilla beige and smoky.
Vanilla.
It's not a great color name. It sounds like just boring. Vanilla beige.
Vanilla beige. It's like it looks. It sounds derogatory.
It looks nicer than it sounds.
I'm sure it does. Pick a better name. You
like, can. Hey.
Yeah. So the leather surfaces of the seats are the vanilla beige, and then the smoky, is on the door panels and the seat backs and things
I
like
just
that.
Call it's like vanilla a dark beige. Gray. It actually is a nice color.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that name
vanilla beige.
Sound like we couldn't do better. Vanilla beige is all we got. Like what?
Happened? Yeah,
it's something it's like that's
the two colors that you the two color names that you probably don't want to incorporate vanilla. In a luxury right? vehicle. Vanilla and beige.
It's just beige.
Yeah.
Let's put them both. That'll make it okay. No, it doesn't.
It's what kid calls you when they think you're boring. Yeah. You're like, yeah, you're pretty vanilla beige. Like, oh.
You're pretty vanilla beige.
We'll have to send a note to our friends at Genesis and say
vanilla beige guys, really.
Send a note to Wendy and say, hey, Wendy, you might want to reconsider the naming of this interior color.
Vanilla beige.
Yep.
Vanilla.
So that is the 2025 GV80 Coupe 3.5T ESC all-wheel drive.
Wow. A lot of words.
That is a car.
Okay, take a deep breath after that one.
And then vanilla right. with vanilla beige.
So there is also something that all three of us got a chance to drive, not this past week, but the week before. Mm-hmm. At I think were you two of you on the same wave?
Yes, we were.
So you two were on one wave. I was on the third wave, we all got to drive the 2025 Hyundai Ioniq 5.
Woo-hoo!
So. Who wants to go first? Robbie, you haven't described driving anything
first.
Yet today.
Yeah,
so.
You talk about it.
Yeah. Well, as someone who owns a 2024, it drives like the 2024. So there we go. That's the driving. The driving impression is it drives like the previous year. That said, everything else about the car, it's like Hyundai said, hey, what should we fix about this car? And then a bunch of people sent a bunch of emails, and Hyundai went through and like, yeah, we'll fix that. Like a lot of the things about the car are better, period. They listen to people. They listen to the journalists. They listen to their customers. They listened, which I think a lot of automakers don't. They just like, well, we'll just tell you what, you know, we've already bought this stuff, so we're just going to tell you what you should have in your car. Whereas as Hyundai actually said, so what do you want? You want more buttons? All right, fine. Here's some more buttons. Okay, fine. You want a rear wiper? Fine, here's a rear wiper.
There you go.
Oh, you want some more range? You want to charge quicker? Fine. Oh, the whole industry's moving to J3400? Boom, we'll put J3400 on there for you. It's just like all the same. I think a lot of automakers should be a little embarrassed by the fact that they just do not listen, and they are very slow to sort of embrace change. And I know it's, you know, it takes a long time.
Lincoln, we're talking to you.
I didn't want to pick on them. All the things that in my car that I was driving around in this vehicle, I was like, oh, this is better. Because like right now, if I want to turn on the heated seats, I have to hit a button in the climate controls. It says warmer, which is very weird. It's like you hit warmer, and then a pop-up, like a widget pops up on the screen and covers everything else, and you can adjust the heated seats for both the driver and the passenger, and it has the heated steering wheel. And if you have, you know, cooled seats, I'm sure that pops up on there, the ventilated seats. Now, there's just a little button, just like in our Kona, there were buttons. It's just like, you hit the button and the seat gets hot, the end. Those are back. And I'm very happy about that. I think those are back. The rear windshield wiper, I think I shared the story about my wife texting me and saying, hey, how do I turn on the rear windshield wiper in the Ioniq 5? And I'm like, okay, I have some bad news, sweetie.
it's kind of like when Andre at TFL bought his Chevy Colorado a couple of years ago and it got delivered and he realized that he forgot to order cruise control because it wasn't standard.
Oh, geez.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Except in the case of the Ioniq 5, it wasn't even an option. It just wasn't available until this year.
Yeah. Okay, fine. there's some other things that they've done. They worked on the battery chemistry, so you're getting more capacity, it charges quicker, all the things that, you know, a mid-cycle refresh should have, including, once again, listening to people. Like I can just hit there's a forward and back button, like actual buttons for when I listen to music. So I don't have to like load media, hit the thing, you know, if I'm on, say, if I'm using Hyundai's Hyundai's navigation, I don't have to like pop back into CarPlay or, you know, you can use the steering wheel one, but if you're, you know, the passenger's like, I don't want to hear this song, bleep. That and a fun thing is now that you can manually precondition your battery. Mm-hmm. Before it was only based on routes, and so if you had a charging station, or if a charging station was your destination or is it along your route, it would precondition the battery on the way to the route. Now you can just hit a little button that says activate and it'll precondition your battery, which means if you are a fan of using Google Maps or Apple Maps or MapQuest or a better route planner, you can just use that, and then as you get close to a charging station,
CarPlay or Android Auto,
you're
using the maps in there.
Yeah, so you can just use those as your main maps, and also the display is nicer. It's less cluttered, which I, you know, God dang it,
where's
the thing in front of you,
screen,
the car, that screen, what's it called,
cluster.
Gosh. The cluster, Man, so the cluster is it's less less fan, it's less like, ooh, we're in the future, and more like, okay, here's your car. And the mapping, everything, like all the displays are they've sort of pulled it back, which I'm a big fan of like let's settle down, people. Let's settle down.
I think
people just want a car. They don't need a crazy insane graphics. They just want things that are easy to understand, easy to read, and easy to use.
But the only time the crazy graphic is when the car first starts up. Like, I love in the Bronco, there's a little Bronco, a little bucking Bronco.
Yeah, I don't mind that. Like, oh, like, it's a little party.
Like, and yeah. A little start down. Like, feel free to give me a little music, little graphic, but then stop. Stop it. That's the only time.
Stop it. After that,
just.
After your little surprise party where you turn on all the lights and say, surprise, car.
Stop.
Shut up and let's just sit down and do what we have to do. So those are sort of my, without stealing everyone else.
No, I would say this.
As someone who has the 2024, these are the things that I really enjoyed about the vehicle. The center console has changed. I don't know about the one thing I don't know about the putting the charging station on top, your wireless charging for your phone versus in the little cubby where you can't see your phone.
Mm.
Because right now, like it's down there. I can't see my phone and it won't like slide around because it's in like a little cave. Like now it's on the very top. And I, you know, especially if you're driving the XRT, you might have it bounce around. It seems like it's a pretty deep crevasse. It's a pretty deep like area where you put it in. So I don't think it's gonna, on a regular driving, it'll go flying out. But I like it. I like a little home for my phone.
Yeah, I would second everything you said about this. In fact, when I wrote the review for, I just said a great EV gets even better. Like it was like just little bits and pieces. It wasn't like this dramatic change. It was like, oh, you made this little thing better and that little thing better and that little thing better. And collectively, you're like, oh my gosh, it's much better from a bunch of little things. The only big change was they added the XRT, which is a whole new trim. So the XRT didn't exist before. And that gives you, I don't really want to say it's an off-road, it's off-road-ish. I mean, it's not.
It's like the Mustang, the Mach-E, yeah. Their little rally car. It's like one of those. It's like, you know, it's a really fancy like Impreza.
And arguably it's better off road than the Mach-E rally because it actually has more ground clearance.
Yeah, like
not as much as you get in a Subaru.
And it was they let us do that little. So they have the loop that they had made up for us. You went off road and it was like just a little loop that you could come back. And in the middle of the loop, there was like a little almost like autocross thing. Like you go really fast for a little bit. So you had a loop within a loop and you could drive it as many times as you want. And you knew that it wasn't going to be like this, I guess, sort of speaks to it. It's not technical and that they didn't have anybody there spotting you. You know, it wasn't a Jeep thing where you needed a guy to go to like, no, quarter inch to the left, you're going off a cliff. No, you could just
a little hand,
right, little hand motions. You're like, oh dear God, let me do this right or I'm going to die and I'm going to ruin the car. It was just like, go follow the signs. And you could do that. And what was nice about that is if you really wanted to drive really fast, if you wanted to push it a little bit more, if you wanted to get the little butt to swing out there, you could do that. If you wanted to take a little more casually, you could. It was a great little route for showing what the XRT would do, which is not heavy duty off-roading, but you're going to drive in the dirt. You got to go a little off-road to something. You're driving to a cabin, to a lake, to a river, whatever. You can have a little bit of fun. And it is capable of doing it and handled beautifully. So I thought that was nice. And it looks good. Again, it has red tow hooks in the front. If a car, vehicle has red tow hooks, then you know it means business. There's red tow hooks.
Yeah. Everything. Once you add red tow hooks, you're like, ooh.
Immediately. Like, oh, everybody? Serious car here.
how do you feel about the design of like the front and rear fascias and you know with the big pixels on the front bumper?
I forgot exactly what they call it, but there's like this pattern on the molding around the wheels and along all the cladding is like this patterned. It makes me think of camouflage. It's not, but.
Yeah, well, it is. It's like a digital camouflage kind of
it's
style.
It's all like black. It's not like it's different colors. Yeah. It's all black, and you almost kind
of get
unless you get close up, and then you can see that there's a slight difference to it. I think it looks kind of cool. I like that they have the XRT. So it's the badge is sort of built into, embossed into, I guess I would say, the plastic.
Debossed. Exactly.
Thank you. Debossed in there, so it has a slightly different look here and there. And it even says, So on the doors, when you open up the doors, the door panels have this little pattern that's in all of them. But in the XRT, it also says XRT. XRT. So you know when you open the door too. So and they have these really rugged floor mats. Like they feel like you could.
Yeah, that's the floor mats that should be in every car. I just think it should be in
every car. I don't care if like, I don't care where you are. You're destroying the floor of your car eventually. I have nice, good floor mats. So I thought it was nice. I thought they did a really good job of just that little bit of extra that you want to be a little bit more rugged without truly being like a heavy duty off-roader. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the major things that changed mechanically for the XRT is they did retune the suspension. So it's got different springs and dampers. Mm-hmm. So it's got an extra inch of ride height compared to the standard Ioniq 5, which the standard ones are 6 inches, which is the same as the Mach-E Rally. The Mach-E Rally's only got 6 inches of ground clearance. The XRT has 7 inches. So it's got a whole extra inch, which isn't much, but you know, every inch counts, especially if you live somewhere like New Hampshire in the wintertime, you know, or Michigan, you know, or places like that. So that extra inch helps. They also have the terrain modes that they built in. So there's an extra button on the steering wheel with the terrain modes. So you've got like snow, mud, and sand, I think, are the three modes. And when you select one of those, then what it does, it changes for each of those modes. It changes the tuning of the slip thresholds for the stability control and traction control and ABS. And it also puts it into 50-50 torque distribution. So the XRTs are all standard all-wheel drive. And on all of the other Ioniq, well, actually, even on the XRT, the rear motor has more power than the front motor. So it's a 200-ish horsepower rear motor, a little over 100 horsepower, 120 horsepower on the front motor. But when you put it into a terrain mode, it gives you 50-50. So it actually restricts the amount of power output from the front. So you get the same front to rear balance, 50-50 front to rear balance. So it's kind of like having a center locking differential, even though there is no center differential or transfer case in this thing because it's electric. And that's fine, actually, when you're going off-road. You don't actually need all that power. Although, it would be nice to have an XRT-N, you know, 600 horsepower. See what that could do.
See what that
could do. But who knows, maybe someday we'll see that, but for now, I had a lot of fun with it. You know, the trail, the place where we were was in the San Andreas fault zone,
which freaked me out when I found out after the fact. I'm like,
really?
Yeah. I was like, we were driving where?
That's just our lives, man. California, yo. No,
that's the Lois Lane died in the Superman movie. No. Mm-mm.
Oh, that's true. But he brought her back.
Yeah, but Superman is not my boyfriend, so I'm just going to die.
Oh, that's true.
I love Russ. He's a super guy, but he's not Superman. So.
Oh, no, don't listen to this episode.
So the trail, I would say that the trail that we drove out to this little course, it was probably a lot of it was more challenging than the one that we experienced a couple years ago for the Palisade.
Oh, yeah. The Palisade was just a dirt road.
Yeah. So this was a little more than a dirt road. There was rocks and stuff, but nothing too big because you only got 7 inches of ground clearance. It was, you know, once we got onto that course, you know, it was mostly deep sand and it was actually a lot of fun to toss this thing around. And even though it was 50-50 power distribution front to rear, it doesn't specifically have a drift mode. You know, if you threw it into a corner hard enough, you could actually get it to drift a little bit through a corner.
I turned off the traction control to do that. I'm like, hold on. Let me turn this off.
So that was fun. And then what else? And as you said, Nicole, there were some people that took a leisurely stroll through that course. Others took it a little more aggressively. When I stopped to take some photos, I know there was somebody who was going through quite leisurely, and then there was somebody else who stopped to open up a gap, and then didn't wait long enough, and quickly caught up to the person in front of them. That was actually a lot of fun playing in the deep sand with this thing, and I'm looking forward to actually getting a chance to drive one of these here in Michigan, because I think, you know, one of the other changes for the XRT is the standard versions of the Ioniq 5 have either 19 or 20 inch wheels with relatively low profile tires. You know, that's fine, you know, for the most part. It's probably bigger than it really needs to be, but the XRT has got 18 inch wheels, Continental cross contact all terrain tires that have a little more sidewall. You know, they're 65 series tires, so they got about an inch more sidewall than the 19 inch wheels do, and that means you got a little more compliance off road, but also when you're on bad roads. And so I'm curious to see how this thing handles Michigan potholes. What else? I really like that Pixel camo pattern that's molded into the bumpers and the wheel arches. Especially when you're out in the sun, you really see, you know, it really shows up when the sun is shining on it. You don't even have to be up close looking at it. You know, you'll see it when the sun hits it. You'll see that it's not just the usual flat black, you know, matte, you know, which looks kind of cheap. You know, you see this and you think, oh, these guys actually gave it some thought. They didn't just put flat black, you know, matte, you know, smooth black plastic that looked like it's just left unpainted. You know, they gave it a little bit of thought. And I like it. I like it a lot.
One thing I noticed that I forgot to mention in everywhere, but on the SEL and higher trims, you get roof rails. So you can put, so it's easier to add like whatever, you know, bicycle racks, ski racks, snowboard racks, whatever. Which it didn't have before, because I don't have that in my car. And I'm like, oh, man. It's like, there's a lot of things in 2025 where I'm like, man, I wish I had this. Oh, man. And that sand. So I was with Tommy Micah. So we kept like stopping and like goofing off for video from TFL. So we were, you know, we were making videos. And then we made cameos in each other's videos. It was like a crossover event of the season. But we would stop like right in the sand, and then he's like, gun, and I just gun it in the sand. And most cars would just like sink, especially a car that's, you know, heavy. It would just, it didn't have any issues. Just go. It would just make it through the sand. So I think that's helpful for, you know, for folks who are driving and they stop and stand. They don't realize what's going on. And all of a sudden they come back to the car and like, oh dear. Oh no, I need a shovel and I need those big orange things. And I need, I need to use my giant tow hooks.
When we were during the presentation, you know, before we went out for our drive, they told us that the tow hooks actually do work, because earlier in the week, one of the people on the Hyundai PR team, who remain nameless, actually did manage to beach an XRT out there. He got it in a little bit too deep, and was basically sitting on the battery pack on the sand. So they actually did get to utilize the tow hooks to pull them out, and it held on, worked great. So the tow hooks are real; they're not just cosmetic.
Now I'm gonna text everybody now that they're back from Korea. I know they went to Korea this week. Right, I'm gonna text everyone. So, are you the one who did the thing?
I'll tell you afterwards.
All right. I think I know who it is. I have an idea.
I'm guessing. Yeah. Share with us after, Sam.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the bigger battery bigger battery capacity. The pack itself is physically the same size, but they tweaked the chemistry of the cells. So now you've got, on the base standard range rear wheel drive models, you got 245 miles, which I think was 220 before.
Yeah.
I recall. And then on the rear wheel drive extended range, it's up to 318 miles, which was about 304 before, 302. And then on the all wheel drive models, on the SE and SEL with the 19 inch wheels, is 290. On the limited with the 20 inch wheels, that drops to 269. And then the XRT is 259, because it sits a little bit higher, and those all terrain tires, you know, a little more rolling resistance. But the charging rates, you know, it'll charge up to 277 kilowatts now, or 257.
My video's wrong.
Yeah. 257. Sorry.
Okay.
I was looking at the wrong thing on the spec sheet here. There's just the power output from the battery is 277, but 257 from the for charging. So, you know, even with that, you know, it's about 2 minutes longer now to charge from 10 to 80% on a 350 kilowatt charger. So it's about 20 minutes now instead of 18 minutes. But that's, you know, most people are not going to notice that. You know, because Hyundais have such a flat charging curve, Jonathan Gitlin and I stopped at the same supercharger in Cathedral City that you and Tommy did. Did you stop at a charger, Nicole?
No, I did not give it a go.
So, Robbie, you want to talk about charging on a supercharger?
So it's okay. So it's because the superchargers are at 500 V3 superchargers are 500 volt. So the vehicle has to step down to 400 volt, which means it only charges at 136, 137. I forget the exact number. But because these there's a buttload of superchargers out in the world, so they have a lot of experience, and they're everywhere, and they've been around the longest. You just pull up, you use the app, you click, I want this one. It starts charging. The end. That's it. And it charged at 127 the entire time we were there. So it just hit, like, it ramped up and it just stayed at that that level, which was, you know, which is nice because you see a lot of, like, sort of fluctuation. And a lot of that has to do with, like, sort of the, you know, Hyundai's, you know, really working to make sure that their vehicles are efficient, which means they're efficient as when they charge as well. So you have this really nice charging curve. But because, again, it's V3, it charges slower. Now, here's some anecdotal fun. I drove to Palm Springs this year for Christmas. On the way back, we came back the Saturday after Christmas. Obviously, everyone else decided to drive that day as well. So we went to an EA station with our Ioniq 5. We ended up waiting over an hour to charge. Meanwhile, in that same vicinity, in that same little off-ramp area at Kettleman City, there's like 70 superchargers versus the 8 EA stations that we're all waiting for. So if I were driving this vehicle or if I were driving my vehicle, yes, it's going to charge quicker on the EA station, but I waited an hour to charge, you know, 3 minutes, 5 minutes.
So you quicker. Probably would have been faster overall if you had had an adapter to charge on the supercharger.
It would have taken me what, like an extra 5-10 minutes to charge versus waiting an hour plus to charge. So that's sort of the where we're at. Everyone who has an electric Hyundai is going to get an adapter. I think maybe in March they're going to start sending them out.
Said they're going to put it up on the website in sometime in March to order them. And everybody going back to the original Ioniq hatchback, every Hyundai with a CCS port on it, those owners will get a free adapter.
Yeah, so that's great. And you know, it's, you know, if you want that extra ability to charge at a lot of different places, which really comes down to what I've seen recently is that EA stations are cheaper than Tesla supercharging stations by like 5-10 cents per kilowatt. So I'm seeing a lot more Teslas actually charging at EA stations recently. They'll pull up and they're like, oh cool, if there's a spot, they'll pull in and they'll use it. But if there's not, they'll go find the Tesla supercharging station with 160 like spots versus the 4 EA stations. I will say there are V4 chargers being built 2 blocks from my house right now.
Oh.
So as soon as those are, it looks like they might go into service maybe early mid-March. It looks like they were in service for like a day and then they took them out of service because there's less than like 40 of those in the United States. So as soon as that happens, I'm going to reach out to Hyundai and or Lucid about getting something with the J3400 port. Also, the EA station, there's another one being built like a half mile away. And like it looks from like afar, like they still have the cables wrapped up, but the handles look like NACS handles.
Oh.
So I'm going to have like...
That could be one of the first.
Yeah. So I'm going to have like the perfect testing area for all these things.
Well, they know where you live, and so, you know,
yeah,
we got to make sure Robbie's exactly. covered for all the testing, so he doesn't have to drive off to places like Tahoe and
yeah.
Palm Springs to test this stuff.
Yeah, so I'm tired of that. So thank you for doing that. Yeah, so it's you know, on the website, so they just say charging stations are coming. They don't really tell you, but I did go and take pictures of the Tesla ones because they're not behind a fence, and they have it's 1,000 volts. It's 2,000. It's, what does it say? 200 to 1,000 volts. So yeah, and they're the new like block stations, and the cables are longer, like all the things that you're expecting, and it's like 15 charging stations at the location. So you know where EA is like, hey, we made 4. Okay, fine. And it says like, here's 25. I'm like, what, guys? You can just, they have the business model. It's right there. You can look at it. So.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things you mentioned earlier, Robbie, is that for 2025, they added a rear wiper. You know, the original logic when they designed the Ioniq 5 was, you know, you've got this spoiler on the top of the hatchback, and there's a big slot in there. And what was supposed to happen is when you're driving along in the rain, you know, the air flowing through that slot, you know, would clear the rain off the back window. Which mostly kind of does.
Sort of. It, not really, though.
But if it's snowing, then it doesn't do anything at all. Then you're hosed. So having that rear wiper was handy because on the day that we were driving on Friday, you guys drove on Wednesday, I think. On the day we were driving, you know, the drive route took us from Palm Springs up into the mountains, up to Idlewild, all the way, you know, all the way across and looped back around back to Palm Springs again. And during the course of that several hours of driving, we encountered all of the weathers. You know, we had bright sunshine when we left Palm Springs. As we drove up into the mountains, it started raining and pouring rain and coming down really hard. And by the time we got up above about 4,500 feet, it was snowing. So we had snow. And then on the way back down, we hit fog. And then finally back into sunshine again. So we had all the weather.
That's a good. So we just had overcast and rain with a little bit of sun. We had rain
snow up
in the
mountains, and we drove through. Did you have the snowy bit? We had a little.
I mean, I saw snow, but it wasn't really snowing. And we were sad.
It was snowing on us.
Yeah.
It was a good thing. You know, we all remembered to take jackets with us because when we stopped at the driver change spot, you know, the coffee shop, it was cold up there. It was like 30 or about 30 degrees, 29, 30 degrees.
They had boba there. So Tommy, you know, we were all very excited because apparently Tommy and I are children.
but that rear wiper, it does work. It works very well. So
yes, it works really well. I was very happy about that. I was all turning it on and off. I'm like, this is the future.
Yeah.
And I got home and I got my car and I'm like, oh, boo.
Any more thoughts on the 2025 Ioniq 5?
They don't give you 3 years of Electrify America anymore, which I abuse like there's no tomorrow, apparently. So I just opened my Electrify America app to see like how much money I've saved using Electrify America while I'm doing road trips. $1,466.44.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So and guess what I'm doing on Friday? I'm driving to LA for one of my bands has a show, blah, blah, blah. But I'm driving down there again and I'm taking the Ioniq 5 because it's free.
Yeah.
Why not?
But I mean, we charge at home. I've originally I'm like, we should just charge at the supercharging station because it's lease and or the EA station. Wait, that stopped like within like 3 days. I'm like, no, we'll just charge it at home at night. This is dumb. Why are we? It was like living with a gas car. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. So now they have a deal with ChargePoint, where when you buy one, you either get a free ChargePoint level 2 home charger or $400 worth of charging credits at ChargePoint charging stations, which is not much. But
$400 is $400. I would probably get if you don't already have the charging station at home, and if you can actually use it, then yeah, get the charging station. Get the one with the plug, because then you can swap them out. I mean, you can swap out the regular ones too. Whatever. Don't listen to me. Live your own life.
and if you do buy a 2025 that has the J3400 port, you will get a complimentary adapter as well to go, so that you can plug into a CCS charger. So you won't be stuck just using superchargers. You'll get a free adapter for that as well.
And unless you're at the V4 Tesla charger station, it'll charge faster at the CCS stations typically, because most of those are now, like, EA's done a really good job of, like, switching everything over to 350 as much as possible. So,
but even at a supercharger station, because the charging curve is so flat, your Hyundai will still charge faster than a Tesla.
Yeah, even though it's technically slower because it's flat the whole time. It's like the tortoise and the hare. Yes, where they, like, the Tesla will charge really quickly, then slowly slow down while it takes a nap. Meanwhile, the Hyundai will just keep chilling, cruising along at the same level because it has a flat charging curve. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Was that a good analogy, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
The rabbit and the turtle.
Yeah. So, pricing. We didn't talk about pricing.
Oh.
The SE standard range, I think, is roughly the same price as before, 42.5. The SE, 46,550. The SEL, 49.5. The XRT, 55,400, which is on the pricey side. Yeah, it's getting up there. And the limited is 54,200.
So I think it's a little bit more expensive, but you're getting a lot of more stuff.
Yeah.
And more range and quicker charging. And
yeah, I mean,
billions of charger stations.
I would still recommend this over most of the other options in this segment, you know, for electric.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I got one, so.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about one more charging thing. Which is the General Services Administration. This is a branch of the federal government, which, like most other branches of the federal government right now, is being in the process of being burned to the ground. Over the last several years, they have invested a bunch of money to put in 8,000 charging stations at federal government facilities. So the GSA provides services to all kinds of other federal departments, among which includes, you know, managing the federal vehicle fleet. So they manage the fleets for all the other departments. So they have installed 8,000 chargers. They've procured thousands of EVs. And over the next several weeks, it has been decided that having chargers at federal government facilities is not mission critical. And so they're going to decommission all of them. Instead of just leaving them there.
If they're not going to support them,
like, they're there.
Do they have to take them offline because they're not supporting them? And if you're not supporting it, will it still, I'd imagine you still have to support it if you didn't take it offline to some degree. I don't know.
So they just
stop. I mean, there's some cost associated with it, but, you know, compared to, you know, everything else that they spend money on, you know, it's pretty de minimis. It's more of a petty decision.
Yeah, because then they're getting rid of all the EVs. We don't know if they're going to sell them or just put them in storage. So you have, like, this all this money tied into these stations that you've already paid for, these vehicles that you already have, which have a lower operating cost than the gas vehicles. Because most of the time, you know, government vehicles, you're in one region. You're in, like, a town. You're in a county. You're not really going, you know, 700 miles. And for those vehicles, for those trips, they have, you know, gas vehicles. And so now you're just, what? It seems like bad. Like, you could even, like, just leave them there and then, like, charge people or something. It's instead of using, you know, forensic accountants to make these decisions, it's just like, no. Turn it off. Like, but that doesn't even make any sense financially. You're losing money.
it's kind of like, you know, when Ronald Reagan came into office in 1981, you know, under Jimmy Carter, they had installed solar panels on the roof of the White House. He had them ripped out
just for spite.
Yeah. all right. So the other side of the Hyundai Motor Group fence, there's Kia, and later this week, a couple of days, actually, I think might even be tomorrow. Yeah, I think it's tomorrow. Kia is going to have an event where they're going to provide a bunch of detail on some of their new EVs, but this week they released at least some images of a couple of new EVs that they've got coming, both of which we've seen before, but now we're seeing the production versions. One is the EV4 compact sedan. So this is like a K4 sized sedan. And actually, you know, has some design similarities to the K4.
Yeah, K4 is a cool looking car. Neighbor got one.
Yeah, and they showed it as a concept at the 2023 LA show. And then a couple of months later at CES in 2024, they showed off the PV5, which is part of their Platform Beyond lineup of commercial vehicles. And so this is an electric van, a midsize van, both of which are coming to production. What do you think of these?
I want that van.
I bet you it gets better range than an ID Buzz.
Oh yeah. Well, it's just, you know, you get the van, but you get the EGMP platform, mm-hmm. which is, you know, 800 volt. It's, you know, it's Kia is really all about efficiency. Yeah. You could haul your dog so far in that van is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I like the EV4.
Yeah. And then they have the EV4 hatchback, which maybe
I'm thinking of.
We are getting the K4 hatchback.
K4 hatchback, which looks cool. So there's an EV4 hatchback, which they just show like up above and from the sky, which we'll see. That's, you know, it's a lot of skews for one. But man, that K,
you like the PV5.
I think. Yeah, and I think there's a. We'll see how it does versus everything else that's in the market when it comes to like range and you know, obviously it's going to charge quicker because, you know, it's 800 volt and everything else on the market right now is 400 volt. So more efficient.
You know, my wife and I have been leaning towards an EV6 as the replacement our current Civic hatchback. But, you know, this EV4 hatchback, yeah, this is a little, you know, the EV6 is bigger and we don't really need that's the size of that vehicle.
Yeah.
For the two of us. So if this EV4 hatchback were to come to the US market, this might actually be the one we want. And this would probably be quite a bit cheaper.
Oh, probably, yeah, because it's smaller. Yeah.
Yeah.
The IONIQ 5 is so big. Like, you don't realize, even when you're in it and when you own it and when you drive it around, it's in your drive. You just don't realize how big it is until, like, okay, we have the dogs in the back seat, or we could have a 6 foot something tall person. And then you open a trunk and there's still like a ton of room under the hatchback. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, this is a really big car.
When you see it in isolation, it looks smaller than it is because, you know, it's kind of got the same shape of something like a VW Golf, you know, an old VW Golf or something like that. But when you get up close, you realize, you know, it's pretty big on the outside and really mm-hmm. big on the inside.
Yeah, it's a pretty big vehicle. It's especially when it's sitting next to like the BRZ, which is not a big vehicle.
Yeah.
I want to see the PV5. I don't know if they're going to bring it to the US. They'll probably like, well, let's see. I think they're watching ID Buzz numbers and seeing how that goes.
Well, I think they are going to offer it here, you know, as a commercial vehicle. Whether they offer it as a consumer product, I don't know. But I think at least as a commercial vehicle, I think the plan is to bring it here.
Yeah. If that's the case, then it won't have a huge range.
You don't need that for commercial. That doesn't make sense for them.
Yeah.
But it'd be cool to have both of these vehicles here.
Start your own LLC or S Corp and then you can buy a PV5.
Well, I mean, you could, I'm sure even as an individual, you could buy a PV5. Yeah, commercial vehicle. It just wouldn't necessarily be equipped the way you would want
your fancy, you know, a typical consumer vehicle with heated seats and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's sell. Oh, the Chevy Spark EV. There's a new Chevy Spark EV. You can't. We're not going to be able to get it here. You remember the original Spark EV?
Yeah. There's still a couple around. I see them driving around here.
It had about 80 miles or so of range. You know, it didn't have a lot of range. It was very much a compliance car in about 2012, 2013, 14. But they've built a new, it's badged as a Spark EV, but it's, and they're selling it in South America, and the Middle East, but it's actually a little mini crossover. and it's built in China, and it's basically a rebadged Bajun Yep Plus.
Yep.
Okay, have you looked at how the charging port works on this? There's a picture in this story. It's like the entire front panel like shifts up, like what you think of as the grill shifts up in the truck. How is that going to work in the snow? I feel like you couldn't get that open in the right snow.
That's why they're selling it in South America and the Middle East.
You do not have that vehicle in New England. The other week I was banging on the door to get the door open on the charging port for the car. I plugged it in and then it snowed and iced more and then I couldn't get it shut. And I had to sit there chipping away at the ice that was around the charging port until I could finally get the door to shut. That giant thing? No.
Don't make charging ports complicated. A little door, like your
little
gas
tiny door. Like
like the door for your gas hole. Make it the same door for your electric hole.
That's all you need.
A tiny little door.
So in China, the Bajun Yep Plus is priced at $12,900. And has 223 miles of NEDC range, which EPA would probably be somewhere around 140, 150 miles.
Little range vehicle. That's okay.
Yeah. But, you know, as an around town commuter vehicle, I mean, remember, 80% of daily driving is less than 40 miles.
36 miles, according
if you
to
could,
the Department of Transportation.
And, you know, the Fiat 500e has, you know, similar range, about 140 miles. And cost $35,000. This is $13,000. I bet if they offered this here, you know, if they could sell it for under 20 grand, this thing would.
Well, that's the thing, because everybody, you know, we all get freaked out by range, but for the number of times that you really need to drive a long distance, if you are a two car family, just get one car that you don't have to worry about it. One car where you can use as your commuter. And if you're just a one car family, how often do you really need to drive really long distances? You know?
Yeah. People are like, oh my God, you're driving to LA again. I'm like, yeah, I like to drive. And they're like, oh yeah, I like, and then you ask them when the last time they did a road trip to anywhere. And they're like,
I don't know.
And then they just start thinking about it. And they're like, okay, if you're thinking about it, that means it's been a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you needed to buy a car for your teenager, you know, as a first vehicle.
Right. If you could buy a $13,000 car, that's cheap eats. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
and,
so
if it only goes 150 miles, who cares?
Where's your kid going?
They shouldn't be driving that far anyway.
Where do you think you're going? Get home.
You can't go that far. I'm giving you the Spark EV.
Come on, GM. Give us the Spark EV. Give us this new Spark EV.
The Bajun Yep Plus.
Let's see. BMW, they're going to be launching their first Neue Klasse vehicles. Their new EVs off their new EV platform. Later this year, first production model is going to be a crossover, like an X3 size crossover. But there's a sedan, you know, 3 series size sedan coming, and they've had a pretty cool prototype that they've been working on that is not intended for production, it's based on this sedan body style. And they showed it off this week, and it's like 1,000 horsepower, I think. They call it Heart of Joy.
Heart of Joy.
And it's using a new EE architecture, electronic architecture, and the central compute is actually what they're referring to as Heart of Joy. So this is a prototype for the Heart of Joy. So this is the same electronic architecture that's going into the other Neue Klasse vehicles. But this prototype, you know, is four, you know, I think it's 4 motors. And it's wickedly fast. Let's see, 13,269 pound feet of torque, which, you know, is not, you know, that's kind of a bogus number. It's actually closer to real torque, you know, about 1,100 foot pounds of torque. Because this is the torque at the wheels after it goes through the reduction gears.
Yeah.
But still, you know, they're claiming, you know, 25% increase in efficiency from the regenerative braking system that's in this thing, which, again, that's stuff that's going to be coming to the production Neue Klasse vehicles. This thing is crazy fast. And we will probably see an electric M3 that is something not too far different from this.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. No, it looks cool.
Yeah. I like it.
I like it.
All right. Stella Auto Drive. Stellantis has talked for a couple of years about launching a level 3 automated driving system. So this is hands off and eyes off, similar to Mercedes Drive Pilot, and BMW's got a system that they offer in Germany. And they've been working on this system for a while. It was developed actually in partnership with BMW and Mobileye. And last June at their investor day that they had here in Michigan, they told us that this would be launching in some Jeep products, in or at least a Jeep product, in 2025. They announced it this week. They said, "Yep, we're done. It's developed, but we have no timeline for when we're actually going to launch it." Because they're waiting on regulatory changes, because they don't want to do like Mercedes with Drive Pilot, where in the U.S. you can only use it in Nevada and California, because it's an eyes off system. So it's not brain off. So you can't go climb in the back seat and take a nap. You still have to be there, but you don't have to be watching the road.
And they release it says only... you can do non-driving tasks such as watch a movie, catch up on emails, or read a book, or simply look out the window.
Yeah. You know, in its current form, is designed for use, you know, in heavy stop and go traffic, you know, so you can just engage it, because it only works at speeds up to 37 miles an hour. Eventually it'll go to higher speeds as the regulations are updated. But it does use cameras, radar, and LIDAR. It doesn't mention LIDAR in the press release, but I confirmed with Stellantis that it is using LIDAR. And who knows, someday we might actually see it in available in vehicles here in the US.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. And then finally, the last couple of stories are related to Volvo and Polestar. When they launched the EX90 and the Polestar 3 last fall, they're both based on the same new Volvo SPA2 platform. They're both produced in Volvo's factory near Charleston, South Carolina. And at the Volvo launch event, they talked about that it's their first model that's using the NVIDIA Orin processor, which is a pretty powerful system on a chip for their central compute for the ADAS and chassis control. It does the Orin chip does about 250 trillion operations per second. But for some reason, on the Polestar, when they launched that, they actually launched it with a lower performance computer, which is based on the older NVIDIA Xavier chip, which only does about 30 trillion operations per second, mere 30 trillion operations per second. They are upgrading the Polestar 3s that have been built to the Orin computer. So they will, owners of existing Polestar vehicles will get a complimentary upgrade of their ADAS computer to the same unit that's in the EX90. And then Volvo also teased the new ES90, which is their new large sedan based on the same platform. And that one is going to be the first to get a dual Orin computer, at least the first Volvo to get a dual Orin. There's a bunch of companies in China that have these Orin systems in there already that have had them for a couple of years. But Volvo is going to put a dual Orin in the ES90. And when I reached out to Russ Datz at Volvo, he couldn't comment on whether the EX90 would be getting an upgrade to the dual Orin system or not. But I'm guessing that if they may not upgrade the existing ones that they've built, but probably for model year 26, I'm guessing they'll probably switch to the dual Orin system.
Cool.
Nifty.
Yeah. So some hefty computing power in those vehicles. All right. We have one listener email this week from Joe from Long Island. Joe wanted to share a quick PSA for the winter months. Cats like to crawl up into engine bays to keep warm during the winter. You should always maybe slap the side of your vehicle or hit the horn before you start your vehicle to try and scare off any animals that may be in there. With that being said, I was driving home from work on the Long Island Expressway, listening to Wheel Bearings episode 389 the other day, when I heard cat meows. I pulled over to check, and there was thankfully nothing. I keep listening to the show, and I'm still hearing the sounds of a cat. I paused my podcast app, and it stopped. Turns out it was on the recording. It was Robbie's cat.
It was Sid. Sid was in here a little bit ago. I saw this before we started recording. He started meowing. I'm like, I got to get him out of here.
The other day, is like, what is wrong with Robbie's cat?
He was just so like, meow, meow.
Yeah, it says, started just before the 1 hour, 15 minute mark and lasted a couple of minutes. Just want to say thanks for the laugh and keeping me on my toes.
Sorry, Joe. Yeah, Sid's. He, because he wants to come in here because in the morning the window to the catio is in my office. So I come in the morning, I can open the window, the cat's going in and out. They have the best time staring at wildlife without getting eaten by coyotes and whatnot. But then he gets bored and he just sort of wanders around and then he meows at me and then he wants to sit on my lap and then decides he wants to sit on my keyboard and then he meows at me some more. And then I was like, well, maybe no one can hear him. I guess not. Sorry, everyone. So I kicked Sid out a little bit ago in the middle of the podcast because he started.
I didn't hear him this time.
here we go again.
Patty's been laying around here somewhere. I can't see him right at the moment, but he's quiet been this
silent.
Whole time.
I didn't even know he was there. So
yeah. So thanks everybody, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye. Meow.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.